the context of Chandra Telescope Array CTA, that Kiran was working on these standard and also extensive software development that was taking place, for which he is one of the active members of the team. So the topic and the today's work is going to be on that. But just before that, let me say a few words about Kiran. It is MSc from Shivaji University and M.Tech from IIT Kharagpur. So in fact, so that gives him many edges as a physicist, as mathematics and electronics, software, programming and so on. So he is quite an expert on many of these areas. He joined TIFR way back in 1988 and largely working on high energy gamma ray observatory at Pachmari and then also subsequently now working on ALLE and also in CTA. And he has been known in the institute and elsewhere as a telescope control man. So he has developed a large number of systems which include software, hardware and also the modeling of the pointing. All these aspects connected with the accurate telescope control, pointing and tracking and so on. And so that has been his main activity. And as I said, so today's talk will be more on his, based on his collaboration with the CTA array. So, Kiran.
Thank you, Satya. I thought you should continue on and on. Yeah, so of late I got an opportunity to develop OPC UA prototype server for CTA, one of the CTA instruments, and probably in coming years I'll be involved in many such developments for CTA. And then I thought it is a good topic on which I should share my experience and knowledge which I gained during this exercise. So this will be the outline. I'll go first through motivation. Let me first tell you briefly about the CTA. It is the Cherenkov Telescope Array Project. International project which is aimed at building next generation ground based high energy observatory. It will consist of two arrays of imaging telescopes. One of them will be in northern hemisphere and the other one in southern hemisphere. Each array, as I told you, will consist of large number of imaging telescopes of different sizes and complexities. Here you can see lot many prototype telescopes and cameras, etc., are being tested at various locations all over the world. And so eventually there will be hundreds, rather number may reach up to thousands of devices associated with the camera, then telescopes and the array as a whole. Okay, here is a list that shows kind of devices attached associated with camera and telescope and array. For instance, there is a drive system for telescope, then active mirror control for telescopes. Then there is lidars, then weather stations and so on. So it is a very difficult task. All these devices they are needed to be controlled and integrated into a software called array control software, which is the responsibility of one of the CTA collaboration group called ACTL. So it's really a difficult task for the reasons that each device may come up with its own hardware interface and it may have its own environment, software environment. So the question of interoperability, then scalability, all those issues are there. So this is the solution that ACTL group prescribed. They divided the entire software into, say, rather two parts. ACTL will be primarily responsible for higher level software that will that needs to control the devices, that need to have access to the devices, and it will talk to the, it will have access to the devices using a standard called OPC UA server sitting in between, and this being platform independent, the device teams whose responsibility is to develop OPC UA server, they are free to choose their own hardware to interact with the device, hardware device itself. So finally, okay, so what is OPC UA? So here OPC, Open Platform Communication, is a predecessor to OPC UA. It was a standard interface defined by OPC Foundation, and that is a non-profit organization that provides rules and information about how software applications and devices can send and receive different kinds of data between each other. It was released in mid 90s, and by 2009 it had achieved good adoption in the market. The problem with this OPC standard was that it was using Microsoft based DCOM technology for communication. This is a proprietary thing, and as year by year there were many other operating systems and environments, they became popular in market, so this was a problem. So then came OPC UA. It is a next generation OPC specification released in 2008 by OPC Foundation. It's not an incremental change in the existing family of OPC specifications, but a brand new standard representing a profound change. It is recognized internationally. Its code is IEC 62541, and as on today, lots of products are there on marketplace that are OPC UA enabled. More than 25,000 OPC UA enabled products are there in the market. Now, the purpose of OPC UA is to provide a way for software applications to communicate with different brands of devices without having to implement proprietary device specific communication protocols used by those devices. And how it is achieved? It is achieved through use of an OPC UA server, as shown here in diagram. This is the software application. It wants to have access to many devices having different kinds of, they may have different kinds of hardware interface and environments. So in between is sitting, this OPC UA server is sitting, okay. So this server handles communication between software application and devices. So one is, device vendors are free to implement their own hardware for communication between server and the device, but they have to adhere to this OPC UA protocol as far as communication with the client part that is sitting in the software application. So how does it and why does it matter, OPC UA? So these are some headline benefits of OPC UA when compared, you compare it with OPC. First is, of course, foremost important is platform independence, as it has dropped the dependency on COM, DCOM technology, and OPC UA functions on any of the following or more platforms and operating systems. It is a proprietary technology owned by Microsoft. Okay, that much it basically it involved both software and hardware. Okay, some configuring some hardware and then keeping registry and related with communication. So large number of systems now they can take up OPC UA, they can handle OPC UA. Okay, now secondly it's high scalability. Or for example, it's not needed. It's not needed that whole entire OPC UA specifications need to be implemented in a server. It can be divided into some chunks of some profiles that are subset of the entire OPC UA, and the device need only to implement a subset of total OPC UA functionality that the client needs. Okay, so that makes it possible to have OPC UA in starting from smart sensors and smart actuators to mainframes, whole wide range of domain it covers now. Secondly, there is improved security. Classic OPC had no intrinsic security. It was delegated to COM/DCOM layer. Okay, and it was very complicated to configure COM/DCOM registers. And many times vendors they used to forget, or sometimes they used to give up, and that led to many loopholes in the security as far as networking is concerned. So, whereas in OPC UA there is explicit mention of the security. It is based on public key infrastructure, and this authentication of this application using digital certificates, and then user authentication and user authorization. I will cover these points after a while. Okay. Another important advantage is it improved modeling. Means it allows the device to be modeled. A lot of flexibility is there, and so it provides an extensive vocabulary for device modeling. For example, it provides for type information that allows clients to establish semantic information, then express relationship between components. This again I will cover after a while. Allowing clients easier browsing through related components, etc. This entire thing, this for example variables in the address space and its type, and then relationship between those entities together, it is called an address space of the device. I will of course cover after a while these points. And now it uses standard SOAP based service so which can get through firewall with high level of security. So even non-OPCA clients can consume output published by an OPCA server. This is long form object, simple object, something protocol. It is some well known standard. How messages are exchanged? It is basically format. It is an envelope. SOAP is an envelope in which XML messages are embedded, and these messages embedded into SOAP frame, they are transmitted over HTTP. So that is what SOAP over HTTP it is called. Okay, so let's see few functionalities. How OPC UA client and server they interact with each other. So first of all, client should know where to look for the device information. It is a platform independent approach to server discovery. Now Okay, here the client is here and OPCO server is here, but client it doesn't know its address and all those things, endpoints. So there is a local discovery server. Okay, so it is required that this discovery server, okay, it knows all the OPCO servers on the network. And it is at a fixed location and it is known to the all clients. Okay, then client interrogates this discovery server using a OPCO some standard service called find servers. Okay, so after interrogation, the response from the discovery server is in the form of this OPCO server's endpoint description. Each OPCO server, there are two endpoints. One of them is, they are categorized into two types of endpoints. One is discovery endpoint. What it means is, when interrogated, it can furnish you with the session endpoints. It can have multiple session endpoints. It can have, yeah. So once you get what is endpoint? Endpoint description contains all information that is necessary to establish secure channel and session between the client and the server. The main parts are, for example, the network address of the server, security settings like the server instance certificate, the security policy defining used algorithms, and the type of user authentication used to create a session. Sorry. So then client interrogates these discovery endpoints with the standard service called get endpoints. Okay, in response it will get endpoint description of the session, and once it gets it, it will establish that everything is authentic, authorization, authentication, everything is done, and then okay, it is a secure channel. So it will establish a secure channel using a standard service called open secure channel. Okay. Every time it is not necessary that client has to go to discovery server to locate the server in question. It can try a direct connection using a cached endpoint description from the previous browse of the OPCO server discovery.
Type of user
authentication.
So now this opening the secure channel is the same thing as creating a session.
Yes.
So is it not that the endpoints and the descriptions are already picked up by local discovery server and they are passed on, or every time the client has to interrogate?
No. That's what this last point I mentioned here. If it has already done that, it can get that endpoint description from the cache memory.
That is from the local discovery.
From the client itself will have that. So it need not look at discovery server.
One more thing. You talked about security in an earlier view graph. Security here on this view graph refers primarily to security with regard to interrogation of the discovery.
Security regards to any message that is transmitted.
Both sides.
Yeah. It should not be. It should be confidential message. Okay. Even if somebody tries to look at it, it should not understand.
Authentication that you talk about. User authentication is client authentication. That's the same thing as being sure about security.
That is one part of it. Authentication, user authentication is by means of say username and password or some digital certificate issued by some standard authority. Now I will talk about improved security. So as I told earlier, one of the most important benefits of eliminating the reliance on COM, DCOM technology is the expanded security features. What used to happen is classic OPC systems used to rely on difficult and complex configuration of DCOM to provide inter-process security. Too commonly, vendors overlook this step in testing stages, which resulted into difficult configuration for users. This often leads to security being disabled or prevent third party tampering with the message passed between the client and server. For example, one cannot inject malicious content to the message. Okay. In that case, one can, if it is that signed contents, probably something like what you call clients and servers must implement for clients and servers must implement for scrambling data with encryption and signing messages for data integrity in order to guarantee a secure channel. So this is all about how to ensure secure channel. So this is pictorially shown different software stack of software layers. This is client is sitting here, then server is here, then there is a transport layer, secure channel layer, and then application session layer. Each layer has some responsibility to do checking to ensure that everything is all is well. For example, user authorization and user authentication is responsibility of application layer. Developer has to include it in his program. Whereas communication layer or secure channel layer, that takes care of confidentiality, by way of encryption, integrity by way of signing, and application authentication by way of digital certificates. I will read it for you, it may not be clear. Now, setting secure session between an OPCA client and server. So, a client sends, invokes a service called Open Secure Channel, and along with that it passes a certificate as a parameter along with this command. It is like a command sent to the OPCA server session endpoint. So, in response, server checks, is the client application trusted? Check client certificate against internal trust list. Okay. So, if it is trusted, then it will say that secure channel request accepted. Then it will invoke another service. These service calls are part of OPCUA specifications. These are standard services. So, client invokes this create session service. And in response, session created request accepted. So session is created. Now client is requesting to activate the session, and it passes user ID token. Okay. It could be user ID and password and that kind of thing. So server checks, is this user authorized to use this endpoint? Check using implementation specific means. And if it is authorized, then session activation request is accepted and sent to client. Then there will be exchange of messages between client and server. Okay. At the end, it will invoke service called close session and then close secure channel. And this is acknowledgement from server to client, secure channel close. Apart from this, OPCA supports two message formats, UA binary and XML. This is the format that defines how message data is encoded. For example, in UA binary, the format encodes the data serialized into a byte array. On the other hand, XML, it is serialized, data is serialized into XML format, XML, yeah. So this is less costly, but performance wise this is better. So it is more likely to be used in device level communications where processing power is limited and performance is a high priority. Whereas XML encoded message can be interpreted by OPC UA clients and also by generic clients using XML schema contract. Generic clients being clients with no intrinsic knowledge of OPC UA here. So they can also consume the data sent through OPC UA. Serializing and deserializing data into XML format is computationally more expensive than UA binary format. So XML encoding is more likely to be used towards the enterprise end of the communication spectrum. Now, two transport protocols supported by OPC UA is OPC TCP and SOAP over HTTP. Okay, I'll skip the details. I'll go further. So, in order to pass messages between OPC UA clients and servers, three pieces of information are required. One is message format. Then transport protocol and channel security measures. The most likely format and transport pairing are as follows: UA binary plus OPC TCP, the leanest method of formatting and transmitting data, and is therefore most likely combination used at the device level. And XML plus SOAP over HTTP is most firewall friendly and most easily consumed from the perspective of generic clients and is therefore most likely combination used at the enterprise level. Okay, now we will come to another important aspect of OPC UA specification, that is, it has extensive vocabulary in expressing the information about the device in the form of address space. So let us see what is this address space. So an objective is to expose the information of the device to clients in a standardized way, that is, in the form of objects, then its components like variables, methods, and then the type information of all these. The type of object, type of variables, there is no type for methods. And also telling the relationship between these entities. Okay. For example, here an object is shown. It has components like variables and methods. And this has a reference to other objects as well. Now clients, this is exposed to clients, so clients would like to access to this information. So clients can, for example, invoke read and write service calls to read or write the value attribute of the variables. Also it can arrange things so that any changes in the values of the variables, they are automatically notified to the client. Then it can invoke call service to execute methods defined in the object. And also any particular very critical variables, if the values of those variables reach a critical value or something like that, so you can define that that is an event, and you can make that server or this object to emit or to send event notifications to the client. Okay.
But this is only during the interrogation, I mean session time, or it's
no, no. Now session is established. Now what is next that client wants would like to do? It would like to know about the device. It would like to read the, for example, in case of weather station, for example, it would like to read the temperature, current temperature, or it would like to see whether the that weather station is on or off. Okay, that. So how does it access? Now this is accessing the device data. This is about accessing device data. This is after establishing secure channel.
I was just saying that event notifications are only during the session, right? Or after that also?
During the
I understand. I understand. It is during session only. Yeah.
Because
it doesn't close the session. If it is, there are some criticality, then it will not close the session.
Yeah. Actually, the session has been established. Then the object has the methods. Suppose say a fetch a device, temperature, something. So the connection is already done. That means session is established. Now the node is asking for the methods. Like for example, which temperature or whatever we want to fetch. Session is already established.
Yeah, session is. No, no, suppose session has expired and still
go back to the node.
So his question was then whether event notifications will reach client.
Event notification. I think after the session establishment, it will reach the client.
Session has to be on.
So is there any session expiry?
Those things can happen. So with this object, the objective is well defined. Now how to implement it? So each of these entities, like objects and its components, variables, methods, each of these entities are represented as an addressable piece of information. Okay, and this piece of information has two information like attributes and relation with the other entities. So this addressable piece of information is called a node. So set of all such nodes define address space of the server. Okay. Now, for example, here attributes are there, reference, that is relation with other nodes is there. For example, this relation can be, it is component of or is subtype of. Okay. Or this generates an event, this node generates an event which is defined in this node. There are many kinds of references, I will show you later. So basically they define relationship to other nodes, and attributes describes a node. So node class, okay, it defines a type of node. So OPCUA defines 8 node classes. So you take any node, it has to be one of these 8 types. Okay. Some of the nodes are instances like object, variable, method, and some are their types. For example, this object, its type definition may contain in a node that is of this class. So depending upon the node class, a node can have different set of attributes. So knowing the node class of a node helps the client to which attributes of the node to look at. Okay. Here is a brief description of these node classes. Object represents system components, real world objects and software objects. but it doesn't carry any value. And it contains references to variables and methods. The component of this object, that is variable, it provides a value. So the data type of the value, such as integer, char, etc., it is specified by the node of the data type node class. Okay. Now method node, it provides only signature of the method, that is what kind of arguments it takes and what is its return type. A developer is free to implement the method in his own way. There is no binding from OPC UA side. Then there is a view object type, a type definition of objects similar to the classes in OOP, variable type, different for data type, variable type is different and data type is different. Variable type, for example, we can say one is counter type, it is used for counting application, and one of the variables could be analog type. So it gives specific semantic to its instances. Then reference type defines the semantic of a reference. Now that we have the server has exposed the information of the device in the form of address space where many nodes are there. Now how to read the device data? How clients read the device data? It has to read, for example, the value attribute of a particular node. Okay. OPC UA specification describes two services by which OPC UA clients access device data via OPC UA servers. One of them is read service. The parameters for this service include a list of node IDs indicating which nodes and which attributes of the nodes are to be read. And second is maximum age of the data the client expects. If the data corresponding to the node IDs in the server's cache is too old to satisfy the stipulated maximum age, then the server should try to retrieve the data directly from the underlying device. Okay. So this is a kind of polling method. If you want, you just ask for it, you will get it. And this is another service called subscription service or publish subscribe. This service allows OPC UA client to subscribe to OPC UA server data, server data updates, and request that it receive update notifications with a specified periodicity.
So is this the answer to my question? In the sense, the first one is where you have the standard call sequence, and this one is when the server actually
Say again, call no, sequence?
The previous the slide, I was asking you whether the email notification, not this.
Sorry?
Just the previous, just to go for it. The event
notification.
So I was wondering whether
session has to be on. Even that when you subscribe for certain events or certain data updates, session cannot be closed. Okay. So let's, now that we up to now we have seen only the specifications, how to implement that we have not seen. So to help the developers, this OPC Foundation, they themselves has developed what they call OPC UA stack. Okay, so it is also called communication stack, that takes care of message serialization, then message security, message transport, etc. So this is ready to use OPC UA stack developed by OPC Foundation. And it implements the different OPCUA transport mappings and provide language dependent application program interface APIs for client and server applications. It is available at the moment in three languages: NCC and C++, NCC, C++, Java and Microsoft.NET. Further, in that OPCUA stack, there are three layers which I told you here. Sorry. So, this third-party OPCUA toolkits, they tend to be based on this OPCUA foundation stack. For example, this is provided by OPC Foundation, this stack. It is providing an API. On top of that, these toolkits are sitting there, and they are offering more general APIs for the developer of the application to use. So currently, again, three language environments are used for implementing OPC Foundation US stack deliverables. This is what I told earlier. And OPCUA application contents, that is, this is client part and this is server part. This application contains the specific functionality for the application and the mappings of this functionality to OPCUA by using OPCUA stack and OPCUA software development kit SDK. So there will be three layers: this stack layer, stack developed by OPC Foundation, then the software development kit, and your own application. Three layers will be there for server and three for clients. This SDK reduces the development effort of the OPCUA application. Now, example, I developed a prototype server for a weather station. I will tell few things about it. So these are the steps involved in developing your application. This server application was developed using the evaluation version of C++ based UA server SDK library. It is supplied by a German company called Unified Automation. So I used the libraries provided by this SDK and developed server for weather station. So it involves these basic steps. First, you have to create address space. Then you have to connect the nodes in the address space with the real-time data. That is, you have to make connection between your server and underlying device. Then you have to add support for methods, and then support for events. So these are some salient features of the server. It provides this. Initially, I worked on simulated weather station. I simulated data, and later I worked on actual weather station also, but here I am not mentioning that. So weather station provides following simulated data: temperature, humidity, etc. Then there is an XML configuration file that sets the server configuration. It describes the settings such as endpoint configuration, user identity tokens, discovery, registrations, etc. And it offers reading data from the underlying simulated weather station, reading the state of the weather station, basically on or off, and it offers the methods start and stop the weather station device, and also simple event generation triggered by a change of state of the weather station. Means client itself, it puts it on or off, and then event is generated. Whenever there is change of state, I am defining that as an event. So that event I am getting as a client. The change of the state itself is affected by the server defined start and stop method call. Okay. So this is a partial view of the address space of the weather station device. As you can see, there are some nodes that are already available that are created by SDK. So as a application developer, I don't have to do anything, I have to use them. Then there are some nodes in this green color, for example, they are created by server developer. Now you can see all these nodes, they are related with each other using some kind of reference. So list of reference types is given here. For example, here for the double arrow, what it means, it is has subtype, means base event type has subtype called weather station event type. Similarly, base object type has a subtype called weather station type. So these are the kind of references by which they are all related. Then depending upon shape, you can make out what kind of node class the nodes belong to. For example, this rectangle with shadow, okay, it is of having the node class object type, whereas object node class, it is not yet seen here. Okay, I will show you. Then this is this shape means method. So okay, here now before adding object that represents for example here weather station, okay, you have to have its type definition node. Okay, so that's what is done initially before adding an object. I have created a type definition node by subtyping base object type, and then added components like state, then temperature, then two methods start and stop. Okay, they all describe the type of object that can be created later. Okay, now state or temperature, okay, already type definitions are existing in the address space. They are given by the SDK. For example, temperature, okay, it has a type definition in analog item type. Okay. Now temperature itself, it is having these two properties. So this reference means has property. It has outer range, it has got engineering unit, and they have type definition in property type, which is a subtype of UA variable. Now, having created the object type called weather station type, now you can create actual weather station. Now you have expanded your address space by adding this particular object. This object is having type definition in this object type. Now corresponding to its components, there are components for this object as well. Okay.
This temperature, the analog item type is already inherited from the base.
Yes.
SDK. Huh. So what is that on the shaded thing again? Temperature analog type thing here, the one that you there. What is that?
This one. Because there was no space to draw arrow, so I just mentioned there. Actually, arrow should point from this temperature like this to analog item type. Okay. There was no space for me to draw line, so just I mentioned that its type definition exists in this type definition node, analog type node. Okay.
And this is only for temperature. Like that, you will of course have many parameters.
Yes.
For weather station.
Yes, 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 so, yes. Okay. Just for illustrating. Now these are all nuts and bolts. Probably I will just skip, but just passing reference I will make. For example, to create node, we have lots of whole range of classes that are given to us by SDK. The classes is in green. They are interface classes. That means they don't define. There is no implementation. Then classes in without any color here. They are implementation of these interfaces, and these are the new class implemented by the weather developer, server developer. So typically, to create a node, one create an instance of this class, and then ask node manager, to add corresponding node in the address space. Okay, then node manager itself is an instance of this class here, which is again derived from existing classes. Okay, so node manager's function is, for example, it can allow browsing and managing the address space. Then it can add and remove nodes and references. Then it can read underlying data using from the device using this IO manager UN. By deriving from IO manager UN node class. Similarly, it can manage events by deriving from event manager class. So, okay. Now, you want to read. Okay, again, these are details, you need not go too much into it. Basically, in response to a read service call from the client, read a say value attribute of a particular node, what happens? Okay. So if you set, for example, one client wants to read temperature, then there is a one flag called value handling. So if that flag is set to this option, then variable has cache value which is not updated by SDK. So in response to read service call, you have to read the value from underlying device, and update its value. Then that value will be passed to client. If this option is default option is selected, that means you don't have to look at the underlying device. Whatever is the value of that node, temperature node, you have to pass it to the client. Okay. So such is the case when automatically that the value gets updated based on the event. Okay. So these are again details. I'll skip. So this is last slide. So this is summary. So OPCUS standard provides a comprehensive and secure way to build and operate multi-vendor clients and servers. Platform independence is a major advantage over classic OPC. Then OPC Foundation has so far made available the communication stack layer that handles communication between clients and servers. Currently, three languages are supported. Application developers' task is made a bit simpler by use of SDKs developed by third parties. These SDKs build upon the OPC Foundation's communication stack layer.
The SDKs are proprietary.
They are proprietary, yeah. So you have to have a proper license to use it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Kiran. No questions?
Discussion? What does the user interface look like and how can communicate these parameters to your weather station?
How does it communicate?
How the user it will be seen on a screen.
That client has to. Client will be getting those values and he has to then play with that data, whatever way he likes.
That's a different part.
That is different.
That's a simpler part, rather. Because you are only talking about graphical interface.
where he will pass on parameters, gets the things displayed. That we will cover it.
That is user custom.
So when it is, and but one thing not clear is, when you say client, node and server, so basically node is the attribute taken as a server and client is just taking one node attribute fetching something like that. Is that correct? So there is a server, there is a client. So server has lot of nodes defined in it, right?
Yeah.
So how does a particular node assign to a client or something? What actually the client will fetch? Suppose server is having so many nodes.
Yes. So there is a first of all a service, standard service, just like read service and all other service. There is a browse service is there. So client at the beginning itself to understand what that device is, it will browse through entire address space, and then it will look at the objects and it type definition nodes also. So what it means? For example, there is a the variable called temperature, but what it means? What is its type? It is analog type.
And so we like to have a temperature record. So we go through entire temperature types. It will select.
Yes.
It will only select the temperature type and fetch the data.
It when it says read service, it passes as a parameter the node ID, which node is to be read.
So
that is a parameter. Right also, yes.
And what is the cycle of temperature data the server is updating?
That the client can define. I want a data updation at this rate. So the server will do its best effort. It is not guaranteed that whatever client has told, say every second, every minute, whatever. But if it is not, it will do its best effort.
Is there any time stamping associated with it?
Yes. When your data is sent, there are two timestamps. One is source, that is the time it has read, server has read the data from the device, that is source timestamp, and the other one is current time. I don't know, I forgot that.
Yes.
So that timestamp is sent along with data.
Yes. When it is server is reading.
Can it? Just guessing. The thing is, one new set is, for example, if the client sets certain time, saying that the data should not be older than this and so on, the server goes to the device and actually fetches a fresh copy of the data and passes on.
Yes.
So there should be a timestamp associated with actual data acquisition, and the one that the node actually, the server actually transfers to. The server. So there may be two. You need two timestamps.
One is when actually it fetched data.
Yes.
The other one I didn't understand.
Actual transfer.
The current. Yes.
Cache
yeah.
Scenario,
yeah. Yeah.
The data age.
Yeah. The cache.
Data aging, right? So you say you find the data has aged, then you again go and fetch back the data.
Yeah.
So that is what I asked. What is the fetching cycle? Like 1 minute I am going to fetch the.
No, unless server is given asked to do that job.
Whether it is on event.
That is also there are two kinds of. One is polling is just client sends read command, for example, read. That time it will fetch the data, or if it is in cache, it is not older, it will send. Secondly, it will ask server whenever there is a data update, you send me. Don't wait for my. You see. So that notification it receives.
How frequently this data can be transferred?
I just about asked this
question. Size of the data in the transfer, maximum limit is there.
So the thing is, what is the limitation in terms of?
One limitation could be how fast one can read from the hardware. Data. And then second is of course network. How efficient? If traffic is very high, probably. So any time critical thing, probably this is not suitable.
Data size.
Size of the data, I will know, for example, I can transfer in single chunk, some 1k by 1k, that many bytes I can send at one stretch. No limit set. But when you write application, you have to set server configuration. There you have to say, okay, maximum size can be this much, array size can be this much, all that.
You use this for the tracking of the
system. Yeah, but only slow control things.
That's
slow
right.
Control commands, etc.
Those are
time critical things are taken care locally.
That's why my question is, you use this PC for, but because in the beginning you showed a big list of devices that can be controlled. So do you also use in CTA for actual telescope control? Or?
Yes, it is. Drive system it is used.
Kiran, this is low, what do you mean by slow? How slow?
I don't answer for that. Suppose connection itself is
critical applications may not be able to do it. That's why it says the local driver, local servers has to take care of them.
Yeah, but you need to also energize those maybe by this, but because the network and other overheads also will come into play.
Yeah.
Going by the practice of asset. This is a nice picture. There are so many devices here to control each other, but no OPC. I don't know how they talk to each other and talk to Shivdi at a given point of time. Remember? So
you can develop OPC for this.
Thanks.
By the way, this picture is taken by Mr. Sanket Nagarkar, one of the TIFR family members. So this is for you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Kiran.
Yeah, it's okay.